This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, and streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
This week we have a new release. It is called The Shed. It's a nice little horror movie. We'll be getting into that one just very shortly. We've got a short shot called Darker Colors, which is going to be really interesting to talk about. And then a film really close to my heart in our DTV throwback. It is Retroactive, starring James Belushi. So let's crack on. So our first review is The Shed. Stan, a 17-year-old guy on probation, finds there is a vampire living in his shed. But nobody believes him until his best friend, who's bullied at school, seems to want to use this new pet monster as some form of weapon against his enemies. Which is an interesting film. It wears its heart on its sleeve. You know, it shows its cards right away with its opening sequence. So we know we know as an audience exactly what's going on in the shed. So other characters are a bit slower on the uptake. But this kind of like Proximity in our last episode, it's not quite sure what sort of film it wants to be.
I think it's very much sort of tipping its hat to stuff like Fright Night.
Yeah.
It feels very much of the sort of the 1980s kind of mold. So young, sort of rebellious hero. You know, he's a bit very much the outcast. There's a girl he's interested in. They kind of the film brings them together as they sort of come up against this threat and stuff. I had a lot of trouble with engaging with this film, I'll be honest. It was so familiar that it was just so familiar and just not engaging enough, bringing anything sort of new to the table, that I found myself very much distracted and not really giving it, sort of drifting away, and sort of, I think I was looking at my phone at times and stuff. But the last sort of vestige of praise with some films can be the way it looks. And I do have to say that, the film looks really good. I mean, the locations are very limited. It's very rural. So we've got like the farm sort of area where the guy lives, and the shed is, sort of located, and the high school, and that's pretty much it. But I felt a lot of it was quite contrived, So for example, you have to get people to the shed. And just loads of people just keep turning up.
I know.
I mean, like one off in one scene, it's like two or three people within like a few minutes, and this is supposed to be like happening almost in real time, are turning up, and it's just I didn't kind of go with that. And so that was kind of my main problem with it. I'll be honest. How did you get on with it?
I'm kind of the same for kind of different reasons. It really overuses the whole dream within a dream thing. It happens, at least three or four times within the film. And in fact, during the opening one, I was actually fast-forwarding through it because it was just so sugary and smolty. I thought, oh, my God, seriously? And then it sort of like takes a turn and it's like, oh, it's a dream. Or a nightmare.
I did really like that, actually. I did like the opening and a couple of the dreams. But I thought that was building to something, and that there was going to be a twist ending. There was going to be a, is it real or isn't it real, or if this was a dream or whatever kind of payoff. But there is no payoff of that kind. It's kind of what you see is what you get with this.
I thought the bullying thing, funny enough, I was watching Christine about a couple of weeks ago, the John Carpenter.
Very similar, isn't it?
That whole thing with the sort of bullies and stuff like that. And I think that sort of thing was done much better with a film called Some Kind of Hate. handled sort of very similar sort of thing. But I did like the fact that, you know, there's actually two of them, you know, there's him and his mate, and his mate's getting picked on a lot as well, and feeling resentful when Stan. You know, isn't there to help him that one time or something.
Yeah, I think those characters, those two guys and their relationship, which is quite complex, I think they're pretty well-drawn characters, and the performances are good. The whole thing about the vampire, I mean, the open, it starts off with a guy on the run, a guy called Bane, played by Frank Whaley, who is then attacked. So the original vampire kind of disappears, and then it's Bane going and hiding in the shed. And he's like a proper monstrous vampire, and the kills are pretty good, and there's a lot of prosthetics and blood being thrown around, and there's a couple of scenes where Stan's kind of trying to deal with the situation, and he's like shooting holes in the thing and stuff, but he's not really. It's kind of like, what's he trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Because he could just knock the whole thing down and...
Yeah. Or burn it.
And burn it, but he'd burn alive and stuff because he can't come out of the shed because it's daylight. That's the whole thing. So I'm not sure that contrivance of him being actually in the shed works. I think also the problem is slightly the setting up of expectations. When you see a film called The Shed, it's such a sort of comical title. You expect a bit of humour, and this film doesn't have any. There's not really any joke. Well, there might be one or two, but it's not the horror comedy kind of thing that you might expect from the title.
Yeah, especially since there's the Shaun of the Dead knockoff, Shadow of the Dead.
Yeah,
which was actually pretty decent. Yeah, it actually did make good use of the shed, and in the zombie apocalypse and everything. But anyway, yeah, you're right. There's some good sort of prosthetics and effects and things. You know, once the cat's out of the bag, as it were, and everything, you know, there's the siege at the house, I thought that was done really well. There was one sort of lengthy homage to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, when he finds out the sheriff's gone back to his house and he has to sort of leg it home. And he's running through everyone's gardens and everything. I thought, okay, yeah, that's Ferris, but, you know.
I didn't pick up on that, but that's a good catch.
But him and his, female friend, I won't say girlfriend, he's infatuated with, who likes him, they sort of start having this sort of banter, which doesn't feel earned in the film.
Hmm.
When they're sort of going, did you check the attic? Well, no, you didn't tell me there was an attic. Well, I told you to check upstairs. You go, yeah. Well, upstairs is an attic. You know, all that sort of stuff. It's like, no, you haven't established this level of banter at all. You know, you can't go into it now. And they sort of repeat it at the end when they're going, did you check the boot of the car? Sort of thing. But there you go. Anyway, I think we've exhausted this one, Rich. How are we going to score it?
Because I didn't really engage with it particularly well, I have to go sort of for a middle of the ground five on this one.
Yeah, as you say, it doesn't bring a lot to the table. It really didn't even, the premise of the friend sort of coming in and wanting to use it to dispatch his enemies sort of thing doesn't really sort of come to fruition. Either it does sort of lend itself a bit more to the friend in Fright Night who gets turned into a vampire that has more leanings towards that than anything else. But I think it's almost a six, but I think it's going to end up being a five.
Before we move on from it, I just want to mention a couple of things. There's one of the other actors in the movie is Timothy Bottoms, who plays the abusive grandfather character.
Oh, yeah.
And by coincidence, we covered one of his brother's films, Shadow Fury, recently. So I thought that was a funny coincidence that we've ended up doing a couple of the Bottoms brothers movies.
Two Bottoms.
But also, Frank Whaley who's had a really, he's a really good career, a really good character actor. He's been around since like the 90s, turning up in stuff. He had like leading roles in the John Hughes movie Career Opportunities and turned up in various other things, but he's much more of a character actor these days. And this role, you know, you see him at the beginning and he turns into Batman, but he doesn't get anything to do.
No, not at all.
So
not at the very end.
It seems the role basically seems completely beneath him. You know, he's a good actor, and this vampire turn didn't really give him anything to play with. So I actually felt that was another sort of detrimental aspect of the movie.
Yeah, there's no real interaction between who, you know, what's in the shed and the other characters at all.
No, not at all.
Anyway. Okay, so a couple of fives, unfortunately, for The Shed. Our short shot this week is Darker Colours. In this one, three young children find themselves battling, well, what exactly? As they seem to be battling their own imagination deep in the woods. Rich, this was an incredibly interesting film, directed by Seth Worley.
Yes.
Brilliant cinematography, great ideas, incredibly ambiguous in its in what you're actually watching. You know, are we seeing like these kids' drawings coming to life, or is it simply a case of their imagination? And that in itself is left up to the viewer, which I thought was very, very interesting. Three great actors in this. You know, I thought all three of the kids were brilliant, especially the girl. You know, I thought she did an amazing job. She seems to be wise beyond her years, for sure.
Lexi Janicek.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be seeing her name in the future. Yeah, this is just like, you know, of all the films we watched, all the shorts we've seen over the sort of past few months, I think this is probably going to be the most memorable.
Absolutely. It's only 12 minutes long. Seth Wall is one of my favourite filmmakers at the moment. I mean, we've covered films of his before, including Go Bag, which is a personal favourite. He brings so much to the movies, you know, in terms of all the quality and the, you know, the writing style. He's a very imaginative guy. So there's lots of ideas and that. This is his first proof of concept film. So we don't get a clearly defined beginning, middle and end. It's you don't have to watch it as a proof of concept. It does work, I think, on its own merits.
Yeah.
There's supporting, because he works for or with a company called Red Giant, who put the film out. I don't know if it's his company, I'm not sure, but all the films generally are associated with that and have lots of like making of materials and that behind them, telling aspiring filmmakers what they've done and what they've used to do various things. And there's so many amazing bits of kit that people can get hold of these days. There's a video he made called Why Make a Proof of Concept kind of thing, where he goes into the fact that this was a film that he's trying to get made off the ground as a feature. And you know, the wrestling that he had with himself is, do you try to make a feature and make a short and it ends up, you know, being the only thing you make, or, you know, it spoils the main feature or whatever, you know, different reasons that he's done it. I think it really works fantastically well. And I hope that it does the intended job of securing financing for the feature that he's trying to make. Cause I think it's such a great idea. It seems like it should have been done before. And I'm not sure if something similar has been done like it, but it is incredibly well executed.
I think there have been riffs on this sort of idea before, at least sort of, you know, using, you know, you've had things like Dreams, you know, like Dreamscape and...
Do you remember Paper House in the 80s?
I was going to say Paper House, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely that sort of thing.
But you've got the... it's one of those films where it invites you to rewatch it because you don't really know what the hell's going on. And then you want to go back, and once the sort of penny drops, you sort of go back and see a different thing. So you've got the kids of, there's no parents around, it's just these three kids, and they're doing their drawings, they're talking about stuff, and you don't really understand what the situation is. And then they go outside and they see this car. It's got loads of blue stuff all over it. And it's like, okay, I don't really know. And then they go to the woods, and that's kind of where one of the big there's kind of a big scene takes place there, and then it goes to the house where you get sort of a big final confrontation. The characters have Amber is the kind of the main character of the film. She has a clear arc from like the beginning of the story to the end. You know, she's only like five or something or six, but she gets like this sequence at the end where it's like she's Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2 or something. She's like, The Quiet Place kind of conclusion kind of scene or something. So she gets like this badass moment where she's coming in with this idea, you know, how she feels like she's strong enough to now take down the creatures of her imagination almost. Mm. And then we get this kind of final shot in the movie of the three kids sort of staring down another threat, which brought to mind, you know, it's kind of like Stranger Things, but The Mist as well and stuff like that.
And they've made a maze as well. It has a touch of that to it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very good observation. Yeah, that's a really good film. Tackles a similar idea in a very different way, but yes, very.
It's the way people, you know, you got people interacting with one person's imagination.
Yeah.
In a way, yeah. It's very interesting.
Because the visual effects, as you would expect, are, you know, if you've seen any of his films before, I say completely top notch. I mean, this is amazing, amazing work. You've got to check it out.
Absolutely. We'll put the link for this short in the footnotes, so check it out. I think a good sign of any film is, you know, leaving the audience wanting more, and you're definitely going to be wanting to see more of this after you've seen it. Our DTV throwback this week is Retroactive. When her car breaks down in the middle of the desert, ex-hostage negotiator Karen's day goes from bad to worse when she accepts a lift from a guy called Frank, because he turns out to be a complete psychopath who murders his wife and tries to kill Karen. Luckily, she manages to run into a top-secret scientific laboratory which is inventing time travel. Finding herself back 1 hour earlier, Karen tries to fix what had previously happened, but ends up making things worse and worse. Now, this is a true hidden gem, Rich, this one. It's, I think, cruelly overlooked by most people, possibly because of, you know, it's just Jim Belushi, known for his comedies, if anything, and not really any other sort of names in the cast. But this is just one of the best time travel movies out there.
Yeah, I think it's quite amongst those who've seen it, it's very well regarded.
Yes,
I think it did pretty well when it came out in 1997, I think it was, and there's a lot to recommend it, not least the fantastic sort of location cinematography of the desert. I mean, this is a low budget film with not a lot happening in it. I mean, the internal scenes probably look, you know, cheaper than the rest of it, but it looks great, and it uses its budget really well, uses its locations really well. The limited story, it's got this kind of Groundhog Day theme, which has gone on to, you know, we've seen more recently in stuff like Primer, I guess would be probably the best sort of comparison to bring. But this is an action movie primarily, so we get a massive escalation of the problem. So the more you try to fix it, the worse it gets.
Absolutely. And that's what I loved about this, is the fact that, you know, the first time she goes back, she's like a bit confused, and then sort of realizes, what's actually happening, and tries to change things, tries to warn people what's happening, but ends up getting more and more people killed as a result, which is really amusing. You know, you start to sort of map out where people are and how they, you know, where they come into the story each time. It's really, really interesting. It's got a great cast. Jim Belushi, in one of his best roles as this sort of foul-mouthed psychopath, who you realise that he suspects his wife's been having an affair and is planning something but he's got his own plans as well. And this poor woman, Karen, is sort of caught up in the middle of it all. It's just really, really well done.
Yeah, and so Belushi is completely playing to his strengths in this. Mm. He's, you know, it's one, as you say, one of his best roles. I mean, he's his usual sort of, he's got that sort of obnoxious charm.
Yeah.
You know, he's really in your face, bit, you know, quite crude, not a particularly likable character, but you're drawn to him. And he's headlined for good reason, you know, completely steals the movie. He's one of the strongest villains that you can have in a film like this. The director, Louis Morneau, has he's done other films in a sort of a similar setting, let's say, like The Hitcher 2.
Yeah,
Joyride 2. Yeah, and Joyride 2. So both of which are quite similar. But he really got a lot out of Belushi, so much so that they made a second film together called Made Men, which is also highly, highly recommended. Yeah. You know, another really good film, which was made like about 2 years later. But, we've also got Kylie Travis, who is the lead character. Very, very appealing lead. This is one of the very few films she's actually done. She was in a TV series called Models Inc. and appeared in a couple of other bits and did a couple of other roles, but then she retired to become a socialite and just sort of do charity events and things like that. But she's really strong in this. She's a very, very capable heroine.
Yeah, very sort of a Linda Hamilton kind of character, isn't she, in this?
Yeah, she's you know, doesn't take any, you know, whatever. She completely stands up to Frank. There's Frank's wife in the movie is actually Shannon Wiry, yeah, who is completely cast against type. Mm-hmm. You know, she's very much of the period. She was very much the sex bomb in the erotic thrillers that sort of came in the wake of Basic Instinct and stuff. And here she's like really modest isn't right, but she's, you know, she's quiet. She's, you know, she's fearful. You know, she's an abused woman. She has no strength. So her character as well gets quite a nice arc throughout as the story develops and, you know, the time travel kind of thing. So, that works really nicely. Frank Whaley, who we mentioned, had such a small role in The Shed. His role here is also quite small, but he gets a bit more to do as the scientist who is responsible for creating. I mean, the whole setting up of the time travel device is quite cheaply done and not really dwelled on too much. It's quite basic, and there's a couple of sorts. Swirly visuals and that, but that's because that's not what the film is about. The film is not really concerned about the sci-fi element. It's all about the atmosphere of this deserted, isolated highway with like one police officer who's, you know, ineffective in trying to stop any of what's going on. There's even a plot. There's like this MacGuffin kind of thing about what Frank's doing in the desert. You know, he's gone to meet someone, buy some microchips and so whatever, and that kind of ties in with other things that are going on. But that is a flaw in the film, I think, because it doesn't really fit. It doesn't go anywhere, and it's. I think you could have done without it. I don't think you needed it. You know, apart from the fact that Frank is in a sort of a heightened state because he's trying to sort this deal out. That wasn't something I needed to dwell on too much, but it's a fantastic film.
Absolutely. Again, you know, like in our previous episode when we were talking about Shadow Fury, this is sort of, you know, it's been allowed to go out of print in the UK. It hasn't been picked up by either of the main streaming services yet. So, you know, there is a version of it on YouTube at the moment. So we'll put a link into that if you haven't seen it.
I think old importable DVD, because MGM did a release in the States, I think. Mm. You might be able to get your hands on one of them. But I don't think it's ever been released on DVD here.
I thought it had done.
Oh, maybe it has. Maybe it has, but it's out of print, so you might be able to find it in CEX.
Yeah, you might, again, you know, not sort of wanting to send business CEX's way all the time, but, you know,
they need to. The thing is with somewhere like CEX or Amazon is you can search online, you can look for it, or whatever. I mean, some people might be selling it on eBay or whatever services people use, but it's, you know, it's definitely worth tracking down. I used to have it on, you know, the big box, you know, X-Rent. A cassette a long way back, and I quite bitterly regret getting rid of it, to be honest, because I think it'd probably be quite valuable now for collectors.
I think you're right. I don't think it has been on DVD here, because Amazon are selling a copy on VHS for £20. So there you go. You've still got your old VHS machines.
Yeah, which I have. I keep meaning to dig it out because I've got a couple of films that I want to watch, but I keep forgetting.
Well, hopefully MGM will get around to doing giving this the, you know, a release that it deserves, that's for sure. In the meantime, you know, as I said, we'll put a link on to the copy we found online.
Now, Mike,
yes,
before we conclude this episode, mm-hmm, I have to ask, are you aware of the sort of sequel, sort of remake called Slipstream? No. Okay. So the Louis Morneau, the director of Retroactive, and the one of the writers, let me just check what his name was, Philip Gardner, I think. I think it's Philip Gardner, went on to create a second story which played with a lot of the same themes. So we get a scientist. We get the time travel device that can take you back a short period.
Mm.
There's strong female character associated to law enforcement, and a psychotic bad guy who in Slipstream is played by Vinnie Jones.
Yes.
Now the interesting, it's the kind of movie that could so easily have been marketed and may have been as Retroactive too, because although it doesn't continue the story in any way, it just reworks ideas. It's very different. The similarities are so much. I mean, it's even got the same producer, Brad Kriboy, one of the producers. But the treatment is so different that it makes it a very interesting companion piece. So, and that actually is available on. You can rent it on, you know, platform, you know, various services. Mm-hmm. I think you can rent it for like 99p. So if you like Retroactive, definitely give Slipstream a look. I gave it another watch again. It still stands up. It's a very different treatment of the themes. Mm-hmm. Directed by a guy called David Van Essen. Feels a bit like a TV movie. But
so also, yeah. So it stars Sean Astin.
Yeah.
But also Ivana Milicevic.
Yeah, who I really like.
Yeah. She's done a couple of good things over the years. So, interesting. Yeah, so I'll have to dig this one out.
You do have to check that one out. It's very different, ideas and themes and the way it's played, but very good companion piece, I'd say.
Awesome. Yes, so definitely, if you haven't checked this out already, I'm sure you know someone who's tried to get you to check it out at some point, but here's your opportunity to do so. So, do so. And that's the end of the show. Check out the footnotes for the link for the short film that we looked at this week, Darker Colours, and the trailers for the other releases as well. And thank you for listening, and see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments, and tune in again next time.